Phil Nemitz, and welcome to another edition of Born to Run, our podcast of interviews with gubernatorial candidates running in the June 12th primary, in which we take a break from the politics and take instead a look at who they are, where they came from, how they got to be the person they are today. And our guest today is Republican Ken Fredette, running in the four-way Republican primary. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Bill. Nice to be here. Beautiful, nice new office space.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we always take compliments on our new digs.
Absolutely.
So I have done a little, of course, I've known you for a while, but I dove into your bio, and you are about as northern Maine as they can get.
Right. Well, I am, and you know,
it's Danforth, Maine, right?
Well, actually, Holton. That I like to say I'm an Aroostook County native. You get to say that if you're born there,
right?
And actually, you know, Danforth, which is on the very northern tip of Washington County, everything that we did was in Aroostook County because it was the closest geographically. So
tell me, you actually grew up in Danforth?
I did. Right? Yeah, a little tiny town of about 600 people. My graduating class had 24 people in it.
Wow. Is that right? So I was going to say, tell us Southern Mainers something about Danforth we don't know, because it's very small.
Well, I mean, probably most people don't know that Danforth borders East Grand Lake. East Grand Lake is one of the biggest lakes in the state of Maine, borders Canada. It's got some of the best salmon togue fishing in the world. Hmm. Beautifully clean lake, very deep, very cold. And not yet been spoiled by people building camps.
So that was your playground growing up, huh?
Well, it was. We had Darren Lake, Brackett Lake. There were a lot of lakes up there. Most people didn't know what a swimming pool was. They didn't really need one. And so just a great place to grow up, very rural. It really goes back to the days when growing up in rural Maine meant, you know, you really didn't know by and large what was going on in the larger world because you just sort of get up in the morning.
No social media, no internet, none of that stuff, right?
I can remember walking over town. You know, the big event of the day was walking over town to get the mail at the post office. You'd see everybody at the post office, and everybody, of course, knew who you were.
So tell me about your family growing up. You were one of five, six?
I was one of five. My mom and dad, actually, my dad's dad came from Quebec, and his wife came from New Brunswick, and they immigrated into Maine. We grew up in the little town of Danforth where both my mom and dad were from. And they had five boys. I was the next to the youngest, which meant I didn't get totally spoiled, but I think I might have. But great place to
five
grow up.
Five boys.
Yeah, you
Holy
know. And
smokes. That's a handful for any parent.
Well, I like to joke, you know, I'm about 5 foot seven and a half, and all my other brothers are over 6 foot. So you can see what happened at dinner time, right? I wasn't able to get to the table and get my share of the porridge. So they were all great, great brothers. You know, we had all the fun stuff that you do as brothers and argue and fight and laugh and love. Just a great place to grow up. And
are a lot of them still up there?
No. I mean, what happened in 1981, you know, it's really, to me, the story of Maine. We had a pretty significant recession then. Ronald Reagan was president, and my dad woke up one morning and said, look, I can't stay here and make a living and support the family.
What did he do prior to that?
They owned the Million Dollar View, which was up on Route 1 in Weston, which overlooked the lakes, East Grand Lake, Brackett Lake, and whatnot. Ran that for about 7 years. He ran a gas station up in Holton for a number of years, was a contractor. And then actually worked for IBEC, I believe it was called, who built some of the buildings down in Pleasant Point for the Native Americans.
Mm. And so he gets to this point where all that work is essentially dried up. Right?
Yeah, and he just said, look, there's nothing here to do. And so he decides to move to New Hampshire. He knows some other folks from the Danforth area that have moved down there. And so he moves down there with mom, a couple of my older brothers. And I stayed up with my Graham, actually. I was going into my senior year of high school. And so I wanted to stay in Maine, graduate from my local high school, and so
from which you graduated valedictorian.
I did. Yeah. You know, it was the
you
joke.
A good thing going there.
Well, the laughing thing that I like to tell everybody is that, you know, going to a small school is one thing, that you get to graduate valedictorian class, and the second thing is at 5 foot
odds.
Seven. Well, that's exactly right. And at 5 foot seven, you get to play center on the basketball team. So, you know, I mean, it was a great place to grow up.
So you were, it's an interesting age to suddenly, well, you weren't separated from your family because you were with your grandmother, but it still must have been a kind of a radical change in your life.
It was, and it was difficult, even though I probably didn't even realize it at the time.
Yeah.
You know, sort of losing your mom and dad. And you know, again, you didn't have the phones and the internet. And so, you know, it was really a phone call on the landline, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. And
out of state, no less.
Well, and I mean, it was a, I think my recollection is it was a 6 hour drive.
Really?
Which is quite a drive, mm-hmm. especially back in the 80s. So,
So you, were you one of the, were you the type of kid growing up in that part of Maine that, you know, looked just beyond high school and said, boy, I can't wait till I can get the heck out of here, or not?
Well, it was actually just the opposite, you know, because what I had seen was of my mom and dad and my brothers had to leave the area. And so the question to me was, how do I stay in Maine? I love Maine. And, you know, as I kind of looked around and sort of tried to figure that out, you know, my natural sort of competitive advantage was, okay, I can add two and two, and I can generally write a legible sentence. Maybe I should go to college, and that way maybe I could stay in Maine.
How what was your family's history with college? We've talked to a few candidates who say they were the first of their family.
Yeah. No, I was the first in my family to graduate from college. My really what was interesting in my family was really I think there was a degree of public service where my dad had gone in the Air Force. My oldest brother went in the Marines. My next oldest brother went in the Air Force. My youngest brother went in the Army. And when I got a little bit older, I decided to join the Maine Air National Guard because that was part of what we believed in was public service.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the financial aspect of going into the military, but something beyond that.
Yeah, I actually joined in 1990 during Gulf War I. That was really the first sort of Saddam Hussein expansion program, I guess he had.
Right. So which of your parents, who's a stronger person? Who was the strong, who formed you,
well,
guided
look,
you?
I mean, look, you know, mom, as moms always do, right? Mom was always there. You know, she was, you know, doing the laundry, doing the clothes. She was, you know, she worked at the local grocery store. You know, both parents had to work to try to figure out how to get by. I remember my mom used to drive a little bus for the kids that used to go to, from East Grand to go to Holton to take some classes up there. And they bought the van to do that. And my dad did these other sort of odd jobs. And so I saw both of them work hard. You know, and what I saw my dad do was get very involved in the East Grand Alumni Association. He helped form the...
That's the high school alumni
association? Yep, mm-hmm. yep. And he helped form the Danforth Water District. He got the first grant to really bring some clean water to the town and whatnot. And he helped begin the process of finding some money to put a senior center in town at the time.
So how did they feel about you going to college? Was that something they pushed, or is that something they said, well, good luck with that?
Yeah, I mean, they were 6 hours away.
Right.
And so,
right.
I mean, it was really something that I had to try to figure out
myself.
And you
went to UM Machias, correct?
I went down to UMaine Machias, yeah. And I really worked through the local school, which is why I'm a big proponent of schools, because someone like me, you know, hey, look, how do I apply, fill out an application? And then, you know, even today, I have two kids in college, and filling out the FAFSA form is just, you got to have a graduate degree in math or something to do
for
it.
For first-timers, it's a very daunting experience.
Yeah, no, but, you know, UMaine Machias was great. They were really at their peak enrollment back when I went there. Deke Reynolds was the president of the campus, and I got involved as a student rep to the Board of Trustees even back then. And
That was an elected position, I take it?
I can't quite even remember. I don't think anybody else wanted to do it.
That's what, by default.
That's exactly correct.
Right. So at what point did the military, where were you, how old were you when you enlisted in the Air Guard?
Well, so my best friend also from East Grand High School had gone to Norwich University and didn't get a scholarship to stay there, and so he was going to enlist in the Marines. And I said, no, Gerard, you come with me down to Machias. You're going to go in the military. Why don't you go in as an officer? And you've started that process. And so when we graduated, he did go in the Marines, and he was 1 year ahead of me. And so, I when I saw what was going on with Gulf War I just didn't feel like I could sit on the sidelines. And we had this family tradition of it. My best friend had gone in the Marines, and that's sort of how that kind of evolved.
And that was the beginning of a long long stint in the Air Guard. You were 20, how many years?
So I've got over 20 years now. I had gotten out a short period of time after I got out of law school. And then after, again, watching 9/11, I couldn't just sit by and say, well, you know, who's going to do this fight? Because it was a big deal. I mean, to me, it was the homeland being attacked, 3,000 people lost their lives. And so I picked up the phone literally on the next day after 9/11, and I said, look, if you need me, call me. They said, oh, by the way, we have a position open.
Mm-hmm. Funny you should call.
Yeah, that's right, exactly right, correct. Right. Your timing's perfect. Yeah,
yeah.
And so I've been in. I got nearly 20 years now. And you know what people, a lot of people don't realize is our main National Guard, Army, and Air, their ops tempo right now is as busy as it's ever been.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people think the wars are over, so you can stand down.
But absolutely,
not really the case. Now, back up a second, because you went to law school.
Yeah.
Your education, in fact, continued quite a bit after UMaine Machias, correct?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny part.
Kennedy School.
Yeah. Well, the funny part of it is I lived right here in Portland for 5 years.
How about that? Yeah, into the belly of the beast, huh?
Dick Berenger, who's a very good friend of mine, I went over to the Muskie School. To get a master's degree over there for public service, and then went to the law school. And so it was great actually being down here in the big city at the time. Yeah.
Well, it must have been coming from a place like Danforth. Portland is like Manhattan.
Well, you know, it truly is, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, it was a big deal.
Did you like Portland? Did you like living here?
Well, I mean, you know, to me it was, you know, all of the traffic lights was kind of a little bit of a challenge. And what you didn't have then was your phone where you could just plug an address in, right? And go where you wanted to go. And so I think I was oftentimes intimidated by how do I get there from here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the learning curve of getting around.
But I did get a fellowship back in 2008. And matter of fact, the funny part to go back, when I was at UMaine Machias, I found this the other day. It was a application to go to the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Mm-hmm. And I had filled it out in 1987 when I graduated from UMM, never sent it in. I didn't think I was good enough, right?
And, you know, interesting.
Like, yeah.
First in your class and all that, but still you had that
kind
of, inferiority
thing
that
just
plagues a lot of people,
you know,
in rural areas?
Harvard, you know, Penford, right. Go to Harvard, give me a break.
The ivory tower.
And you know, I had gone down, a good friend of mine, Jed French, had gone down and taken a class at the extension school down there at the law school. And so I had, like in 2006 or 2007, had gone down to Harvard Law School to take a negotiation and mediation class. And I went over to the Kennedy School and I said, well, this isn't so bad. And so then I actually put an application in thinking I wouldn't get accepted. And I got accepted, lo and behold.
Mm-hmm. So then it was after that that you went to UMaine Law?
No, that was before, because that was in 2008, 2008 to 10, just before I went into the legislature,
Right. What made you want to become a lawyer?
Well, I mean, you know, I had my undergraduate degree in accounting. I got straight A's in it. I was very good at it. Some accounting firms wanted me to go to work for them. You know, I'd gone to work at Bath Ironworks as a senior financial analyst, and I was in the overhead department, and we were cranking numbers to do bids on ships. Which is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. But after doing that for about a year, I was kind of working in this cubicle. And I'm like, I just can't do this. I've kind of got to be out doing stuff. And so I had the opportunity then to go to work on Jock McKernan's reelection campaign. So I left back Bath Ironworks, went to work for Jock's campaign. He won his election. And then I'm like, well, now what am I going to do? And that's when I decided to go into the National Guard and go to law school.
Now, I read at some point that you also worked for Bob Dole.
Yeah, you know, actually, one of the strange things about how small Maine is, right, when my mom and dad did move to New Hampshire, my dad had a little tree service down there, cutting trees down like aspen. And he was cutting a tree down for a guy, his last name was Rudman, and it was Warren Rudman's father.
It's related, yeah.
Yeah, and the Rudmans come out of Bangor. And so he was fascinated that he met this, you know, this kid from northern Maine who knew where Bangor was, and we became very good friends, and one day he says to me, you know, my son's a United States senator. You should go do an internship for him. So I did that, and then ultimately he supported Bob Dole when he ran for president. And so they called me up, and they said, hey, Ken, would you like a job for a year to work for Bob Dole? And I did that, and it was a great experience.
What did you do?
I was the New England Regional Youth Coordinator. Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. So you were hitting the campuses?
All the campuses, schools, and you name it, I did it.
Did you get any or some FaceTime with the candidate?
Oh, yeah. And you know, and Bob Dole was a kind of a tough cat. You know, I mean, he was wounded during the war.
Right.
He worked hard. I think sometimes he felt he didn't get his due.
Yep.
From Washington for all the work that he did, quite frankly, with George Mitchell.
Right.
A lot of the Reagan agenda.
I was just
going to
bring that up.
Yeah, it would have never gotten done if it had not been for Bob Dole and George Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he was kind of a rough and gruff guy. You kind of did your job and stood back a little bit. But he had a great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But he kept that a little bit quiet at times. And so I'm probably a little bit like that.
Yeah. So if that trajectory, typically, you work on a campaign. He didn't win, unfortunately. Right. But nevertheless, you feel this gravitational pull toward Washington. Campaign work is very often what leads to careers in D.C. Did you feel that pull? Did you ever have the desire to get down there and you know, get a staff job or anything like that?
You know, one of the things about growing up in the small town of Danforth was that as a kid growing up, we had a two-story house, and as you came downstairs, there was a picture of John F. Kennedy on the wall.
You know, you wouldn't believe how many of the candidates in this race say that.
Yeah.
And Republicans, Democrats, doesn't matter.
Yeah. And every morning I got up, I walked past that, and, you know, And I actually believed in this concept of public service. And so campaigns, to me, was a version of public service. And so that's why going to the Kennedy School of Government, to me, was such a big deal, because it was really embodying the work, I think, in the aspirational speeches that he could really talk about, mm-hmm. world peace, and, you know, we didn't need to have all this nuclear proliferation and whatnot. And so... that was part of my public service.
Now, was your family, was it a Republican household?
My dad, actually, back then was a Democrat. Danforth was largely a Republican town, mm-hmm. in a funny way.
What kind of Democrat would you say your dad was?
He was that what we all now refer to as the Kennedy Democrats.
Kennedy. And what does that mean?
Well, there's like three still left in Maine. We're trying to figure out exactly who they are, but we still think there's three left in Maine. But you know, they're the ones that I think they're fiscally conservative, and they might be socially moderate, but they're on the fiscal side, sort of like John Baldacci, you know, that didn't come in even during a time of really financial crisis, want to raise taxes, and I think that's what I kind of identify.
So how about your mother? Where was she on the political, or was she political?
She was not. She wasn't political. Yeah. She was more doing the, you know, taking care of the boys.
And at what point did you become a Republican? When did you enroll?
Well, I figured I had to, you know, growing up as a boy and looking at the opportunity. And again, that was the coming of age of Ronald Reagan. And really talking about, I think, the best days of America are yet to come. And I sort of believed in that. And working for Warren Rudman, and then it sort of all sort of fed into a sort of a natural piece for me, which was really about living the American dream. And I think that's, you know, when you come, look, I mean, it's extreme poverty when you grow up in a town, in one of the poorest counties east of the Mississippi, in one of the poorest towns in Washington County. That's poverty. I think it's actually now listed as the fifth poorest town in mm-hmm. the entire state.
How'd your dad react when you became a Republican?
Oh, he didn't care.
He didn't care?
No, he's...
So this was just didn't create a big rift in the
family. No. Like, in matter of fact, you know, my dad was a small business guy, and so he saw the business side of it. And so it was more for him, that's what it mm-hmm. sort of was all about.
Now, you now live in Newport?
I do.
Correct?
Yeah.
And what prompted that?
Well,
how'd you go from way up north to just some up north?
Well, I had met my then wife, who in Machias, who is becoming a teacher, and then got a teaching job in Newport. Mm-hmm. And Newport has a funny thing, a district court. And so when I graduated from law school, it sort of seemed like a natural place to just go and
hang a shingle,
open a law office, mm-hmm. which most people don't do. I mean, it's as I look back on it, it was quite daring, like.
I
went back, opened up a law office. I still have it there and still enjoy practicing law.
Were you a one-man shop?
One-man shop. Matter of fact, the funny part of it is my secretary was a hardcore Democrat, and so she's been with me now for about 22, 23 years, and we joke about politics.
So what
all
kind
the time.
Of law does a one-man operation in Newport, Maine focus on? Anything and everything?
Well, everything. But you know what? The best part about it is you deal with real people. You know, I might do a will for someone, and 10 years later, you know, somebody will call me on a Sunday because they have my cell phone number, and they say, "Hey, Ken, you know, Joe passed away, and I don't know what to do." And I'll get in the car, and I'll drive over to their house, and we'll sort of talk through that. And
part lawyer, part counselor, therapist.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I really do it is because you're actually making a real difference in people's lives. Versus corporate law or mm-hmm. working as a district attorney.
Criminal
office.
Law? Did you do?
Oh yeah,
criminal law?
I did some criminal law, probate law, civil law.
Any cases stand out? Any ones that you?
There was a
one affected for life by.
Well, yeah, there was one case where there was a young guy that had gotten involved with a marijuana ring at the time, and was really troubled by it and ultimately committed suicide. And, you know, because of I don't know exactly what happened, but it had a real impact on me that it makes a real difference
in people's lives. And he was your client.
Yeah.
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 That's a shocker.
Yeah.
Anytime something like that happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you now are a father of two, correct?
Yeah. You know, my daughter Morgan just graduated from Hudson University up in Bangor.
Give it time.
That's right. Give it a time. With a degree in occupational therapy, she's looking for a job down here in the Portland area because she wants to stay in Maine.
Good.
And my son is going into a sophomore year at Hudson as well, and he's doing a sports management MBA program there. So great kids. I'm very fortunate that you know, they're hard workers, just good kids.
So you've really experienced the two Maines. I mean, you live down here. You kind of, you know, cut your professional teeth down here in Portland, and you grew up there. Now you're back in that part of the state. Do you think what are your impressions of the whole two Maine thing? Or put another way, what do you think? What is it about, say, northern Maine, where you've spent most of your life, that people in southern Maine don't understand?
I think ultimately it's the space and the beauty, but I think ultimately it's the culture. You know, small towns are very small town. Everybody knows everybody.
I live in Buxton, and we consider that a small town with 8,000 people, but that's huge by those standards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in Newport's about 3,000, which is considered pretty decent size.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're held pretty accountable in a small town by what you do, how you do it, you know, but you get a chance to coach the little league team and the basketball team. And I was able to coach varsity soccer at Nokomis Regional High School. You get to be a real player in the community in terms of helping.
What's harder, being a politician or a coach?
Oh, by far being a coach, because the parents, the kids are absolutely fantastic, but the parents, holy, they can be brutal.
Yeah.
But I will say this, and again, where I feel like you can make a difference, they're in the process right now of building a new $70 million school in Newport, which is a combined middle school and a high school. We're shutting down some other schools, bringing more people together, bringing those resources together, and I think affords people more opportunity in the district. So that's one of the things, for example, I think you can do in a small town.
Does a lot for community pride.
It does.
This is a school district, by the way, that not too long ago was in some pretty dire financial straits.
Absolutely.
Correct?
And it's 70% free and reduced lunch.
Right.
And so, I mean,
right,
it's not a wealthy area.
So tell me about your entry into politics. Your first elective office was state rep, is that
yes.
right?
Yes, yep. Yeah.
And that was, what,
2010.
2010, 8 years ago.
Well, you know, I actually...
Who talked you into it? How'd that happen?
Well, actually, John Baldacci, believe it or not, appointed me to the Maine Human Rights Commission. And that was really kind of my real sort of opening to state politics and some of the issues that they were dealing with there. And so Josh Tardy, actually, he was one of the former reps that I had, was getting termed out. I'm like, well, I suppose I should run for the legislature. I had a very, very tough primary. I ran against Bob Emmerich, who was sort of the head of
kind of a
Christian
a religious icon.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so running in that very, very tough primary was like, oh my goodness, am I going to win or not?
Yeah.
And I ended up winning. And really, after that, all my elections, you know, I've gotten 65-70% of the vote.
Was it something you always aspired to, elective office, or was it something that was more circumstantial, just kind of?
Well, you know,
came to your doorstep one day.
As I laugh and think back, you know, in this little town of Danforth, we have a very proud military tradition. And I can remember I was asked, I think as a junior in high school, to read the Gettysburg Address at the town hall. I just get
it. It's like
death.
4th of July.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. You know, yeah. I'm up there in my suit, which I'm sure didn't fit. And up there, I read it. And I'm like, you know, this is not too bad.
You
so
like
I probably
standing
knew
there
then.
Having all those people in rapt attention,
absolutely.
Listening, hanging on your every word,
absolutely.
Even if they were Lincoln's words, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So you've always felt comfortable in that role.
I like to think that where we are today in Maine is in part the hard work that we've done. And what I try to gauge that by is you try to do the right thing. You know, try to do it from my perspective, the Republican values. But recognize it takes two sides. But, you know, I always sort of thought if I got there, I'd be pretty good at it. And I think if you look at my track record, some people will disagree on the left. Mm-hmm. I've done a pretty good job.
If you, knowing what you know, your own experience with a guy like Bob Dole, Are those days over? Can a Bob Dole still emerge, or a George Mitchell for that matter, and work hand in hand the way they did? Or have we moved into a political era, you think, where, I mean, because you're obviously aspiring right now to be at the very center of that.
Yeah.
And you bring these old, you know, small town values to it. Do you feel something's been lost? Even up, I don't know how often you get up to Danforth, but what is Danforth like now politically? Is it polarized? Do you have the same divides that we see everywhere else?
Well, one of the things that I see is more disengagement. I think people really, on the left and the right, on the extremes, I think there's engagement, you know, social media and all that stuff. But I think people feel further and further away from Augusta in Washington, D.C., that oftentimes they're not really doing the work that we want, or the things that we want. And I can see that. And in social media, the Facebook, the internet has not helped that at all.
How were your kids on social media, or how did they grow? They grew up with it,
Oh, yes, they did. They grew up with it.
So as a parent, I mean, it's one thing as a politician to say, good God, look at what this has done to our system.
Yeah.
It's another thing as a parent. How did you handle social media with your kids as they were growing up?
I totally exposed it to them. I said, look, I mean, you're going to have – this is your world. It's not necessarily my world as I get to be a little older, but you need to be functional in this. I mean, whether it's Facebook or Snapchat or all this other stuff, I mean, it is what it is. And
I assume they're very active on those platforms?
You know, for them it's more about friends.
Right.
You know, and that kind of stuff that they're doing.
It's, but you weren't the type who would look over their shoulder and I want to know what you're doing or you know, throw up firewalls, passwords, all those kinds of things.
Never. You know, I think the job of a parent is, right, is you help them in those foundational years. You know, they're Catholic. They went to, you know, through that program. And as parents, you try to help them make the good decisions early on in life. But, you know, really today, by the time a kid's 12, 13, 14 years old, they're on the road. And you can't be there every day as a parent. And so you try to instill those values in them when they're young and realize, hey, this can be a little bit risky. Be careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different world.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I wish we had more time, but we have run out of it. I want to thank you for coming in, Ken. It's been fun talking to you.
It has been. I've always appreciated the, you know, not always agreed sometimes with your articles, but I've always considered you a friend and wish you the best.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I do the same for you. Yeah. That's the end of this Born to Run podcast. Please join us for the others at pressherald.com. And once again, Ken Fredette, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm Bill Nemitz, and this has been another edition of Born to Run. You can find this and the other gubernatorial podcasts at pressherald.com.